Okay, welcome. This is Adina Laver, and I'm here as your host today for our monthly support call, Preparing for Divorce. And we have a topic today we're going to be discussing called Healing Your Heart. And this is our annual pre-Valentine's Day call where we really talk about love and, you know, what this kind of pop culture and, you know, holiday does for us and, you know, what it really means for us in the bigger sense. So we're excited about sharing that call with you today. And this call is sponsored in combination between the Mainline Family Law Center, a mediation firm that really takes a holistic, integrated team approach to assisting people in navigating divorce in a healthy way, and Divorce Essentials, which is a company that supports the emotional and spiritual side of navigating through divorce and really supports people in tactical, strategical, and emotional ways of making it through this journey. So as a team, we really cover all the aspects of legal, financial, and emotional and familial parts of this journey. And so what I want to do is really talk, lay out a little bit of how we are going to run this today. This is going to be a dialogue between myself and our guests, who I'll introduce in a moment. And while this is not an interactive call, we very much want to hear from you. We always do. And what's great is we often get email replies afterwards or people calling with questions or for consultations. And, you know, we really want this to open up a dialogue, even though this particular event is going to be just the dialogue between myself and the guest. So I will let you know at the end of the call how you can reach out and get in touch with all of us, because our guest speaker, Mainline Family Law Center, me, and Divorce Essentials are all here to really support you through this process. And so in terms of, you know, what we're here to do today, our program today is called Healing Your Heart, and it's a few days before Valentine's right now, which, you know, under the best of circumstances, Valentine's Day can create a bit of anxiety almost, you know, am I going to do the right thing? And, you know, just all that's out there in the culture about this one day. And if we're in a position where we're either struggling in a relationship, we're pursuing divorce, we're on the other side of it, it can really raise, you know, lots of more difficult feelings and emotions and things like that. So we really want to have this call that kind of help us prepare and maybe think about how to approach this holiday from a really empowered and strong and love-filled way that feels true for us and maybe doesn't match all of the Hallmark descriptors. But we have with us a guest speaker today, a guest on with me, and I'm just so excited to the dialogue. When we were having our conversation in preparation for this, I could have kept her on the phone for hours, so I know that this is going to be a great call for you. And this is Anna Balfour. And she is a licensed psychologist. She's part of the Mainline Family Law Center's affiliate therapist network, which means that, you know, she's really committed to a healthy process and her piece in it. She's been working as a United Kingdom-trained chartered clinical psychologist for 30 years in Europe, Africa, and she is now in Wayne, so you don't have to travel to Europe or Africa to see her, as a licensed professional counselor. And she works with individuals and couples in her private practice called Potential Difference. Anna is an adjunct professor at Eastern University and a motivational speaker at churches, businesses, and schools. She's passionate about speaking on investing in yourself and your relationships. And so, Anna, welcome on. I'm so excited that you're here with us today.
Thank you so much for asking me. I'm excited at what you're doing, Adina. It's great.
And so, Anna, I really have to start. You know, one of the first things we talked about when we spoke before was about your practice and your approach. And so before we even delve into, you know, love and Valentine's Day and all that kind of stuff, I think the what you do and the way that you approach your practice is so interesting and really want to share that with our callers. So, you know, would you share with us a little bit of what's your approach to working with people?
Yeah, my approach is, I think, probably because of my 30 years working in this area. I was trained in Oxford in England and, as you say, licensed there and licensed here as a counsellor. I bring a lot of different approaches, which I think is great because, you know, we're all different. We all work in different ways. But one particular approach I use is schema-focused therapy, which basically says that, you know, we come with stuff from way back. And I don't spend hours on the couch with people in terms of them talking about distant stuff that's not related to today. But we try and look at patterns, kind of what things happened when we were small and how they affect us right here and now in our relationships. And we see it playing out the same thing and then working in a way that, you know, looks at the thoughts, the beliefs that we have, acts them out and looks at them in terms of here and now. What am I feeling? Maybe using two chairs or what we call imagery, as well as practical assignments to do. So a lot of different approaches that they come together in. What I found has been a great, actually evidence-based approach. There's a lot of research on it as well. It really helps people as individuals and working and using that with couples as well, along with emotion-focused therapy, regardless of the stage they're at in terms of whether they're thinking about getting married, whether they've been married and wondering if they want to stay married, bringing all those different things together in a very practical, hands-on way, as well as looking at stuff from the past as well.
Right, and I think one of the things that I really love about your approach, the schema therapy approach, and you know, how that's structured is, you know, from all the research I've done on the brain is that, you know, one of the things that's unique to the human brain, to the mammalian brain as compared to our early reptilian evolutionary ancestors and things like that is the fact that we really do store memories and that our entire life is like really an integration of things that have happened over a period of time. And so while we may very much be in our present moment and think, well, I'm taking this action or I'm having this thought, you know, and it's completely isolated from everything else, is that we know scientifically that that's not true, that all of our thoughts and all of our beliefs and all of our actions and the way we do virtually everything is interwoven to everything, to what's come before.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you can't just say that what I do now is just because of what I do now. We know that the brain lays down patterns in terms of how we do things. And just because we become 20 or 30 or 40 or even 80 doesn't mean to say, right, now I'm going to do things differently, because you're right, this stuff is laid down way back. But the great thing is that we know now more than ever we can actually change how the brain functions. There are loads of research using EEGs. You know, you wire up the brain and you realize when you say different things and feel different things, we can actually change the different pathways. There's a lot of stuff that the schema therapy approach brings in, allowing for all the latest research and development. And things really do change. It might take time, no quick fixes, which is a bit anti our culture, but things change.
Right, and I think you and I have both seen so much evidence of that, of people who've really made a commitment to saying, you know, whatever it is this pattern might be or whatever it is going on is not working anymore, and when we make a commitment to changing it, that really amazing things happening and being possible.
Yeah.
Well, so let's take this and now let's lay the Valentine's Day context on top of it, because Valentine's Day brings up this whole thing of love, right? And it brings up this, you know, we get images all over the place of little teddy bears and Mickey Mouses and things like that hugging each other and little, you know, hearts coming out and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, and yet we have this whole lifetime of, you know, experiences and memories and thoughts and beliefs about, you know, love and about marriage and about relationship and all those things. So, you know, if we think about, you know, our schemas and as they relate to, or what gets activated, I guess I'm going to use, when Valentine's Day arises, is, you know, what happens for us?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that, you're dead right in terms of that word activating. I mean, we just got to hear the word love. And as you say, we get all these fuzzy pictures of what life should be, ought to be, and yet, you know, we're painfully aware that's not like that. And I think the trouble is, particularly in the culture around where we are, particularly perhaps on the East Coast, there's people aren't real. They don't really say how it really is. You actually don't talk about the fact you might have had a, you know, big argument with your spouse or with a friend, because everything's fine, thanks. I remember once when I came over here, been here 8 years in America, and somebody asked me how one of my children was doing in high school. And I'm going to use the F word, don't be offended, but actually don't be too shocked, because actually what I said was actually he's failing, not the other F word. And it was a bigger thing to use that F word, failure. And this woman actually went white, and I'm not exaggerating for the show, because actually she said, wow, you're actually saying how it really is. You're saying how, it, you know, it's real. And she said, people just don't talk about what's really going on, which is we're all human. You know, we all fail, we all have arguments, we all have problems. But this whole Valentine's thing, it's like everything's lovely, everything in the garden is rosy. And actually it's not, we're humans, you know, things happen that are difficult. But the key is obviously is being able to work through those things, to look at them, which often takes a lot of soul searching, which is then we get back to the schemas. and things that maybe habitually they're always our buttons that our partner or our friend presses, and we get activated.
Right, and I imagine that one of the things that happened, I mean, I even think back to my own past experiences, is you have these images associated with Valentine's Day and couples walking on beaches or giving each other flowers and beautiful dinners and all those kinds of things, is that it can start to activate so quickly those senses of personal failure. Well, if I don't have that, then I'm not living up. But also a lot of judgment about our partners. That if they're not doing things, then, you know, they must be failing. Or if our life doesn't, if my life doesn't look that way, like I'm getting divorced or I'm those things that, you know, it's just that, that word you use, that big F word, like can just be like flashing all over the place.
That's right. Yeah. And we feel that we're no good. And it taps into maybe for some of this early stuff of, well, you know, I'm a failure. I can't. You know, your parents might have divorced when you were younger or something bad happened. And as a little child, just because of your brain and where it's developing, you tend to internalize it and it immediately becomes, it's my fault, even though you're only 3 or 4 or a bit older. It's my fault everything's going wrong. So when you're older, your brain still works in that way. Well, if your partner isn't doing this, that or the other, or other things are happening, it's automatically my fault. Or I'm a failure, or I'm no good, or nobody will ever really love me the way I need them to love me. And then we kind of perpetuate that cycle. And again, it's also push things onto our partners that, well, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. And that's where we need to say, hold on, stop. You know, what's going on here? As I like to say, we put our lids back on, because what happens when we get emotional and activated is that our, if you like, the lid on our brain flips. We no longer think clearly. We don't, you know, execute plans properly. We can't analyze because we're acting out of emotion and that real sadness, hurt, and anger. And we need to just say, hold on, stop. You know, just calm down. Take yourself out for a bit and start to think what's really going on here. But that takes courage. You know, that's really hard when everybody around you, you think, are getting red roses. I think one year my husband actually got me some plastic daffodils. He was fed up with the talk. He said, you can have this all year and keep it downstairs as a reminder that I really do love you. It didn't quite work, did you say?
The intention was there. The intention was there.
It was.
Right. And, you know, I'm sitting here feeling like, or being in the place, and, you know, when I was first, you know, separated and then divorced and knowing other callers who were on, of people who are going through divorce right now or people whose, you know, marriages are not feeling so strong right now or even people on the other side of divorce. And, you know, what are some things like, because there is so much emotion that rises up of, you know, like, what do I start to do with all these emotions that start flooding up into me? So, you know, I'm putting that question out to you and to our audience, and I don't want you to answer it just yet because I'm going to come back to it, but I'm putting it out there because I want everyone listening to really acknowledge, like, all of us are having them. Every one of us is having them when they arise, and to start to say, you know, what's going on for me because of whatever stage I'm at in my relationship or not being connected to someone, you know, what's rising for me? And when we move through the call a little bit, it's like, what can we do with that? So I'm going to put that, and I'm going to come back to it in just a moment. But before we do, I want to go down another path or ask another question, which is, you and I had such a beautiful conversation about, you know, okay, so if we take the Hallmark picture of love and marriage and all of that stuff and relationship out, you know, like, what's the reality of it? And somebody in your situation who's like, you've worked with tons of couples and people and things like that, like, what is the reality? Like, if we put that lid back on, you know, what is really love and marriage like and about?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing we were talking about is the number of people that you might be married to in reality, although on paper you're maybe just married or in a relationship with one person. And I think, you know, basically when it comes to the 14th of February, you have to be on point and your marriage has to be this perfect, lovely image. But the reality is marriage goes, relationships, partners, we go through phases and stages. And I remember somebody saying that when you meet somebody, it's, wow, we get on so well, we compliment each other, we're really made for each other. then you get married or you start to live together and you start to commit to that person, and suddenly it doesn't feel so good. It doesn't match anymore. And you get out of sync. And at that point, often early in a relationship, you begin thinking, he's not the right guy, she's not the right girl. Okay, I've got to get out of this. But actually, as people, we develop and we change. So eventually, after a period of shaking and shall I stay or shall I go, you decide to stay and you both kind of catch up and you're okay again. But then maybe the next time it's the guy who, ooh, gets out of sync. You know, actually, it's because as people, we change. We're not going to be married to the same person. I'm not married to the same person I married 31 years ago. You know, we all change, and there's been difficult times in that. But actually, if you stick through it, and we learn a lot about ourselves in that, that's how we become really, truly who we are. We can actually be married maybe to 10 people or 12 or whatever, which is an interesting thought. But it's about deciding and having that intention, word you used earlier, that I'm just going to stick at it. I'm going to work. Now, obviously, there's a time when you say no enough. But the danger is that too early we say, right, I'm out of here. Because that's what Valentine's Day kind of cards encourage her, was it doesn't match up to this. You're the love of my life. You're my soulmate. I never want to leave you. You're always at my side. If we stick with that, you know, it's not always going to feel like that. But we get deluded into thinking that's true love. That's not love. That's just a soppy hallmark bit. Which you can tell quite annoys me.
Right. No, we can definitely hear that. And so this idea that things are always evolving and changing, and I know you and I talked about, and you just brought up, like, sometimes you each change and you're in that relationship and you got to wait for somebody else to catch up and, or, you know, see if they can meet you in those places. You know, sometimes for a whole variety of reasons, you know, that catch up doesn't happen, or maybe we decide this isn't the right, so maybe we spent three of our partnership iterations with one person and another three or four or whatever, or 10 with another person, because there is this piece of, you know, figuring out when you're not going to come back into sync with each other. So sometimes it doesn't come back into sync. Sometimes it does. And the discerning thing, why people come to you, why they talk to me lots of times, and, you know, and mainline, what they're helping them figure out is, like, is this the next step for you, given that this is the reality? So, you know, I think it's a great lens to put on it, that whether we're actually physically married to one person or two people or three people over the course of our lives, that we're going to be married. It's important to be prepared to be married to many personas over the course of time, because everyone is going to change.
Yeah. And I actually like the image of, I don't know if you watch Star Trek, but, you know, you're actually going along at kind of, I think it's the speed of light or something, and then suddenly everything shakes. And it's that horrible shaking time before then you go into max speed or warp speed or whatever it is. I'm not really a Trekkie, but, you know, it's that image of everything changes in the middle, but then it goes up a notch and it's to a different level. But, yeah, as you say, in my room, therapy room, there's many couples who, you know, that doesn't work for, and it's time to say, no, I can't go through this shaking. This is too much, and I need to move. This is more healthy to leave the relationship and to work at doing that.
Right. So, you know, it seems that whether we're leaving the marriage or we're having to let go of a particular, you know, part of the marriage that we had, you know, whichever those is, you know, I talked to you before this about the feelings that we have, all the emotions that arise, and, you know, what do we do? So this Valentine's Day thing's hit. It's brought up and bubbled up all of these emotions for us that we talked about, and, you know, it brought it up either because we're contemplating divorce, maybe we're in the midst of divorce and all those. So I think it would be really helpful to talk about, what do we do with those feelings? Like, you know, we talked about how healing the broken heart, like, the heart does break in those moments. And what do we do?
Yeah, well, I think we can't do anything unless we've actually addressed that wound that's gaping. You know, we can't put stitches on something that's just there. We have to clean it up. We have to put salve on it. Maybe we have to anesthetize it a bit. So first thing we have to do is to soothe ourselves. We can't even think clearly. We don't want to make any decisions. We just want to soothe ourselves. And that's about doing something nice. It's about bringing your heart rate down. It's about calming your brain. So maybe that might be something as simple as doing something like going for a walk, something that lets your body catch up with what's going on with your mind, with your emotions. It might be having a bath, a massage, playing around golf, just doing something often physical that gets you back into your normal way of being, because we can't think, we can't analyze, we can't speak to ourselves. So it's actually that first step of soothing and being compassionate. So that would be the first step. The second, I often think, and people respond well to the idea of just writing. If you're not a writer, speaking something out. And just writing down what it is you're feeling, what some of the triggers were. A good little strategy, if you can't even write because that's too painful and you're not really sure how to begin, is actually to imagine you're looking at yourself. So I would be sitting there and I would be writing something like, I've noticed that Anna looks really sad. Anna's crying. Anna's wishing that she had a date tonight. She's wishing that somebody had sent her flowers because here she is again. And that's a good kind of third person way to look at what you're really feeling and what's going on. And then the third step would be finding somebody to talk to, be it a friend, a helpline, a therapist. So that you actually have somebody validating and hearing what it is that you're actually saying and feeling. I think those would be the initial three things to do.
Absolutely. And when you started to talk about that, and I was picturing the shaking from Star Trek, I also sometimes think about like a earthquake going. And during the shaking part is not when we can do anything, right? You know, when the earthquake is going or when the ship is shaking, there isn't really a whole lot we can do. We can't take action. We can't fix anything at that moment. It's not a good time to try to, like, take a bunch of steps either, because everything is so wobbly and out of control. And, you know, it's really the moment to pause. And when we stop and we pause, we can really feel the difference between the shaking and the rattling and when things, like, feel calmer and we can actually think clearly and speak clearly and make some decisions. So I really, you know, like that. First thing is, like, get yourself on solid ground, you know, get, you know, wait for the shaking to stop, do some things to help bring that calming down and to really, you know, look at what's happening. And that third person strategy is great. You know, it's not about me. Let me kind of put myself out of myself a little bit.
I
sometimes use the metaphor of fly above yourself, like get a little magic carpet and take a little flight on it and look down and observe what's happening, which takes the feeling of some of it being so personal out of the process.
Absolutely.
And that really are some of the steps to help us start to deal with, you know, what feels hurt, you know, what the pain is in there. And you know, so now if we take this, you know, Valentine's Day, okay, well, we've got this day on the calendar. So one choice is we could just completely try to ignore it and pretend it doesn't exist, which is I've done for lots of times. So that is a possibility. But we can also do something else with it. Like, we can also say, what opportunity do we have here to create something, something that might be healthful, something that might be nourishing? So, you know, if you were to kind of say, how could we productively reframe this whole Valentine's Day if we do want to make something special out of February 14th, you know, what would you suggest?
Yeah, I mean, along the lines of sort of some of the motivational speaking I do and things I write, it's about investing in you. Because actually we can't give out anything to others. Even if Mr. Right or Mrs. Right came along, we actually need something in the bank to be able to give out to them and to draw on. So maybe we can say, okay, that's the day that it actually starts with me, just like the old, you know, the air stewardess or air steward says, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help others. You have to look after you. You've got to invest in you. Life can't stop until you find the right person or find anybody. So what can I do on that day? That's going to be a day that I'm going to do something for me. What can you do that's something new, that's a new experience? There's some great Groupons out there. Go and do something. Find a meetup group. And actually then reach out to others that day. Because actually then there's a lot of evidence about when you give, when you volunteer, it actually improves your mood and your well-being, your sense of well-being. There's a lot of organizations out there. You can volunteer, shelters. The same meetup groups that do stuff, even environment groups. actually reaching out to other people, saying, right, this is going to be my day to kind of, if you like, spread love around rather than sit and wait and hope in vain that the mailman's going to bring you that card or there's going to be an express delivery of flowers. Go out and do something for somebody else. And we know then that that changes our brain. We come back to the brain stuff, you know, the EEG, so that when we think positive thoughts, do things for others, we can actually see different pathways light up because it's actually stimulating the dopamine, the reward systems in our brain, and we feel better. But it doesn't need to be massive or major, just some small little step, then we start to go in the right direction.
And, you know, I love that, and I just want to add, you know, something into it, is that we think of it as the day of love, but what you, I think, made us realize here is that while we think of it as the day of love, most of us really experience it as the day that we're supposed to receive love, right? You know, that we're waiting to be loved. Yeah. And, you know, it's, which really most of the time is only going to lead us to disappointment because our expectations of what that should be are typically not so realistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
whether we're
when
matched
we,
or not, you know.
Right, whether we're matched or we're not matched, exactly. And so that idea of what if this were the day that were about my spreading love, and I, you know, I know from personal experience and I know from a lot of the work I've done with people too, is that when we are willing to, like, give love, like when we open our hearts to give out there, it fills us with the very love we're looking for, you know, that what floods up in us and what we receive back is so much greater than even typically what we've given. But so if we reframe this as the day that we're going to give love to others, that we are going to make others, someone else feel loved or cared for, whether, as you said, through a volunteer activity, through thinking of friends and family, whose day can we make?
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Special rather than sitting in wait and in vain, you know, for us to be satisfied and then to have our expectations not met is such an incredibly powerful and beautiful way to reframe.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine somebody, you know, listening who's feeling really down and very sad thinks, well, you know, I just haven't got the energy to do that. And that makes sense. I get that. But even if you could do one thing, maybe just bake some cookies for a neighbor or, you know, say to another guy that, you know, I'm going to go out and, you know, go and play around a golf. Do you want to come with me? Just doing one small thing. So start where you are. That starts to make a difference because one step, you know, beginning of a 1,000-mile journey begins with one step.
Right. You know, I will also add in again because my daughter, you know, thank God for our teenage daughters who can introduce you to everything hip that we might not all be aware of, but apparently from Parks and Rec, which is a sitcom show out there, which I don't have any familiarity with, but one of the characters there found, I think it came from there, founded Galentine's Day, G-A-L. And it really is about, I think it's, according to the show, celebrated on February 13th. In my house, it looks like it's going to be celebrated on February 17th when my kids are off from school. And, you know, that really is like getting your gal friends together or your guy friends together. But, you know, getting together and really celebrating each other. So if love is not in a romantic way, that there are, you know, people that you love. So it might be through, as we said, you might do volunteer organizations, you might do those things, but what about with other people? Like if we took this notion of the romance out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's lots of different kinds of love. I mean, I'm sure you know there's kind of four different Greek words. You know, you've got the eros, the sexual love, but you've got the agape, which is the deeper love. You've got philia, the friendship love. And, you know, it's those kind of ones that are actually the enduring and lasting ones. You know, the romance of a new relationship, the kind of the, oh, gosh, your heart beats, you know, that changes over time. And, you know, it's those deeper kinds that really nourish our souls. Not saying we don't need the romance, but, you know, it's the deeper kinds we need to seek. Because you say, yeah, Galentine's Day, that's great.
Right. So one of the things, and I've never done this on a call before, but you know, always fun to try something new, is that
I want to
look out, Sharon's like cringing over there on the other side of the phone. But it'll be good. But I really want to encourage people who are listening in, whether you're listening live or you listen to the recording later, is to make a commitment to yourself to do something that really will feel good this Valentine's Day and email it to me. You know, lots of times people email me like, "Oh, I didn't get the recording," or something like that. But what if you sent me an email, whether, you know, when you get the reply back, or you could do it today right after the call, at adina@divorceessentials.net, A-D-I-N-A, at divorceessentials with an S at the end, .net. And, like, what are you going to do for Valentine's Day that is going to be a day filled with love, that you can bring love into it? And if, you know, thinking about what that commitment is you want to make to yourself, and then putting it in writing is a very powerful act to do. And then I promise I'll reply back to you.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, Adina, if I may, and say the other thing you can do as you write it or afterwards is actually to visualize yourself doing it, because we know that when we visualize things, they're more likely to happen. They do that with sports and with other activities. I do it with clients, and it's more likely to happen if you imagine ahead of time that you're doing it. So there's two things you can do.
And let me add to you, because we're like doing building blocks here, but as you're imagining it, is imagine how it feels to be doing it, right? So you're imagining the physicality of it, but then imagining like how it feels inside to be doing it, and imagining that feeling and allowing that to fill you up really adds yet another layer of strength to it.
Absolutely. Excellent. Yeah.
So, and I think one of the last things I want to explore before we get to some resources for people is, and we still have a little bit of time here, but there are people who may be worried about, will I ever find love again? And I think people worry about that, as we talked about, whether they're with somebody, you know, they're with their spouse, but really wondering of, should I be here, should I stay, or should I go? Because they're wondering, you know, we seem to have fallen out of love, and could I ever feel love with this person again? Or someone who's, you know, going through the divorce or on the other side of divorce and worried, you know, will I ever find love again? Am I too old? Will anybody want me? Or, you know, what if I'm just, you know, I'm stuck now, you know? And so let's talk about when people wonder, you know, will I find love again?
Yeah. I mean, actually, I'm just about to publish a blog on them, should I stay or should I go, on my annabalfour.wordpress. And I think one thing to be aware of is looking at yourself, which we've kind of hinted at in some of our discussions. But, you know, is there anything in the process, in the whole of your journey with the partner you have that you're about to separate from, that's about your stuff? And there's likely to be. It'd be very unlikely if there isn't. Because the danger is that we think, okay, we're going to end this relationship, enough. And then we go merrily into the next one. And likelihood is, which comes right back to the beginning of our discussion, that because of those patterns, it might all sound great to start with, and we get that kind of chemistry with someone. But, you know, a client I was seeing the other day, Susan, that she, you know, started a new relationship. It was immediately wonderful, but then she came and said, hey, problem is, the same thing's happening. And she hadn't really done the work after the last relationship to look at her own stuff. So I think that's one really important thing to do, so that when we find somebody else, or we're on our journey to finding another committed long-term partner, we're more aware of who we are and what needs we want met and what we can give. So I'd say that's a really important thing. And it's about actually getting active and being involved. You're not going to stay at home and suddenly find someone. You might find the mailman or the FedEx man or whatever. you actually need to take steps to get out, and that's what's scary, and that's what friends are for. The first step is actually just enjoying life, meeting people, doing things you never thought you'd do. And in the course of that journey, you're more likely to find somebody, but not if you're just, I need to find a man and that's all I'm doing. And I've got another guy that I'm seeing, a guy called Mike, who's not their real names, but, you know, he's just out there to find a person and to be with. And it's like, hold on, how about enjoying life? How about doing stuff that you want to do? And in that way, you're less like a piranha, you know, just going for the bait, And instead, you're becoming more of a full person in your own right.
Right. And there's a scene out of, okay, I'm gonna reveal, my innermost self here, but out of one of my one of my favorite movies, but it, now I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's a Julia Roberts movie. Oh, The Runaway Bride, right? The Runaway Bride
Yeah.
Julia Roberts.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, she ends up leaving seven guys at the altar and things like that.
Yeah.
And really
yeah.
what that, it comes down to, you know, and what it comes down to is that each time what she's very adept at doing is figuring out how do I make myself likable to this particular partner, but what she isn't clear about is who am I? And so that fear sets in right as she gets to the altar, you know, in this particular movie, of the fact that she can't really make a commitment because she hasn't spent enough time with herself.
Yeah.
And, you know, the metaphor that's in there is really even knowing what kind of eggs she likes, right? So there's a whole scene where each time they interview one of her past boyfriends, they say, oh, she likes the same kind of eggs I do. And then there's a scene where she finally, like, makes up 12 different kinds of eggs and tests them all just to see which one she likes because she doesn't know. And so that piece, and that piece that you said about doing our own work, I know that I've spoken with a lot of people, that idea of self-investigation can feel very scary to people. I think sometimes people worry, like, what will I find? And I wanted to just offer, and I'm sure you'll probably add to this too, is that, you know, one frame of looking at it is that it can be scary. The other frame is that how much more powerful it can make you in your life, that you won't find yourself in the situations that are so painful again and again, and you won't find yourself in places of being being unhappy and dissatisfied again and again, because that dissatisfaction and the unhappiness so often comes from not really knowing what makes you happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think it can be scary, therapy, but so I think just as a important point, which is when you find a therapist, first of all, it's best, it's a good idea to choose them to be licensed, because then they have an ethical code that they sign up to, because there's a lot of therapists out here, my goodness, in this area. And the other thing is, see the first appointment as an assessment. You have to be able to like them and feel you can work with them, as well as them feeling they can help you. It really is a two-way thing. Once you have somebody for one session, that doesn't mean to say that's it. See several, because it's really important. It's somebody that you've got to trust. And we actually know, again, from research, that the thing that works in therapy is really the core thing is actually the relationship you have with the therapist. And then that makes it less scary if you feel you can trust them, if you feel you like them. As well as the fact they're credentialed and, you know, who they say they are.
Right.
Yeah. You know, a good therapist will work with you. It's not imposing things on you. It's actually understanding you and getting you. And if you don't feel that, then I suggest you get another therapist.
Right. And, you know, it's just a good time for me to add in, too, like in the coaching work I do when people are coming either because they're stuck about whether or not they should get a divorce or they are going through the process and they're looking for some of that guidance that's very specific to the process, is that, you know, part of what we do is actually include some of this self-discovery to be able to know yourself, because even to figure out how you're going to divorce, who you're going to be in this process, what's really important to you to preserve, what you need to let go of, and then who you're going to be on the other side really includes some of that, and that's part of what we all call the healthy divorce. You know, it doesn't just mean not, like, lobbing knives at each other, right? It means going through a healthy process together.
Absolutely, yeah. And your resource is really helpful. I know a couple of my clients have used it, and the divorce guide. There's ways to do it. I mean, I think it is a bit of a myth that it's all going to be wonderful even through that process, because if you imagine your two hands and your fingers joined together and overlapping, which is what a relationship is, you're actually separating. It's really difficult and painful to separate, and often you actually have to get a bit of friction to get that separation. So I think it's not that surprising if, you know, it is unpleasant for a while, but the aim being that if you still work through it, eventually you can come back and work together on things that you need to work on as well, like children care, for instance, childcare.
Right. So, you know, I want to spend a little bit of time. You and I talked about some resources for people. And so, you know, we're going to be able to, I think, share a little bit about some of these resources that people can have. And then we'll kind of go back and just do a little Valentine's Day recap before we go. But we talked about some resources for people at different stages of the game. So I'm going to kind of break this down for us. And so we're going to start with, you know, people who might be on the phone where you're really not sure if your marriage is over yet and you're trying to figure that out. And I think you mentioned a book to me called Hold Me Tight. And so tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll kind of go on to the different stages of people who might be on the phone.
Yeah, it's a book, Hold Me Tight by Sue Johnston. She's the kind of guru of emotion-focused therapy, which has got a really good track record of kind of helping couples work together. And the actual subtitle of the book is Seven Conversations for a Lifetime of Love. And it actually takes you through how to talk to each other at the basic level and then how to talk about difficult things as well, including sex as well as conflicts, with some practical exercises. That's a great book for you and your partner to read together, and I've had nothing but positive feedback from clients about that one. Another one that is 10-10-10. You don't really need to get the book, but I think I just want to get this in, that if you're feeling, gosh, it's Valentine's Day again, crisis, I'm at this point again. The 10-10-10 rule. Don't do anything now in the next 10 minutes, 10 days, 10 hours, 10 months that will adversely affect the future. Slow everything down. And there's actually a book by that name, but it's that basic, simple thought by, I think it's Welsh is the title, Sue Welsh, Sheila Welsh or somebody. But 10-10-10, slow stuff down. That's really what I'd say in those early stages. Don't do anything rash.
Right. You know, they'd really be take action when you can be thoughtful and intentional about it rather than reactive to it.
Absolutely.
All right. So that's for folks who, you know, couples that are really, you know, someone's on the phone, they're kind of trying to figure out. So then we also have people who are actually, you know, thinking really seriously about divorce and pursuing it. And I'm just going to kind of bring in, ask you a little bit about your experience with it, and then I'll share a little bit about it. But, you know, one of the resources that we have is the Divorce Companion that you alluded to a few minutes ago. You might have some other things. But, you know, the Divorce Companion is something that, you know, I put together as part of the company with a team of divorce professionals that really intended to be a step-by-step guide to this healthy divorce. So I know that you've looked at it, you've recommend to clients to it. So what's been your perspective on it and how this might be helpful to people?
I think the fact it's just very practical and very nuts and bolts. And I think often you get resources that are a bit vague but don't actually go through the steps in detail, like the way you can fill in, there's gaps in the actual worksheet, not obviously on the CDs, but that you can fill in and work together on. Because in my experience, thinking of a couple at the moment, you know, it's difficult to talk about. So having something in front of you or to listen to together, it helps you have those difficult conversations because they really are difficult. Especially in this case, the guy wants to get divorced, the woman doesn't. And they're managing to be calm about it. But having this paper and these CDs are proving really helpful for them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so as Anna's sort of alluding to, there's a video component to it, there's an audio component to it, and then a, you know, a workbook component to really help thinking through, and it's part of the slowing things down, and it's part of being intentional that, you know, when the choice is that this is no longer working, how do we do this in a thoughtful way? So that's our second resource for people who are in that stage of things. And then, you know, we also had a couple of resources for people who are either, you know, they're coming through divorce, they may be on the other end, and they're really worried about finding love, about their own patterns. They might even be afraid. I've had people say to me, I'm never ever getting into another relationship because I can't handle what happens in it. And so that piece about myself and how do I do this. So you mentioned, we talked about a couple of things. You mentioned reinventing your life. So tell us about that one. And then
So that's the handbook really for individuals, the schema therapy. So looking back at your life track. Really, it's the life traps or schemas, whichever word you want to use, the things that the pits you keep finding yourself falling into. And that might be at work, the similar relationships, the same as your partner relationships with them. So I've really, you know, a lot of positive feedback, a lot of people calling me who've read the book, looked up my information on the schema website. And I just want to start working through that. The other one too is, I don't know if you've come across some of the Brené Brown stuff. She's done some great TED Talks on vulnerability and shame. And her books are also very practical, very open. One of them is Daring Greatly, which is more about vulnerability and taking steps forward. And another is The Gift of Imperfection. And again, the idea that we have to be perfect, we have to get ourselves sorted. Well, I'm not going to be. And actually, it helps us look at that stuff ourselves.
Right. So really good resources out there for us to be on a journey, and it is all a journey. And so, you know, as we tie this into, you know, our healing our hearts and looking toward Valentine's Day, is that, you know, I think a couple of big themes that came out, and I love the fact that we ended with The Gift of Imperfection from Brené Brown, is that, you know, when Valentine's Day doesn't feel perfect, that what's the gift in that, right?
Yeah.
You know, what's the gift and what are the gifts that we can give from that place? And, you know, so I think we really brought up some good ideas about making it a day that we give love, making a day we love ourselves and we take care of ourselves. And, you know, we either give it out to people we may know less, or we surround ourselves with people that we know, or some combination of all those things, but that we can make very thoughtful and intentional choices about what to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think this has been, you know, I'm very excited about this conversation and just want to kind of invite you, if you have anything kind of you'd like to say in closing to this part of our conversation, and then I want to introduce people to what we're going to be talking about in April. But any kind of final thoughts that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I mean, just one more. We haven't really touched on our culture in terms of its emphasis on children, because I think that can stop us from looking at what's really going on in our relationship. Because there's this culture, this price of privilege, that we've got to get our children to be, you know, the perfect children, and we put those things on them, and that's a lot of pressure on them. And so really addressing, you know, our relationship, it's got to be, rather than our children being the priority in our relationships, it's got to be our partners, which is about investing time in each other. And that's one thing I really see, that anybody out there, you know, it's okay to say, hold on, Mummy and Daddy, Mummy, or whatever, we need to have time together. It's okay to get a babysitter. It's okay to go out, to actually invest. Otherwise, things are not going to work. It doesn't just happen in a relationship. It takes work.
Right. And I will say from the mouth of my own teenage daughters, they don't always love that, but it is really important.
I went through that, and they often say, yeah, it was Daddy and Mummy, that was okay. It was actually fun when we got left alone. So, with
sitters
or whatever, but
so I just want to, you know, I want to thank you tremendously, and I also want to take this moment to both introduce people to what's coming in April and how they can reach us. So in terms of reaching us after this call, is that you can find any of us. You can find me, Adina Laver, at divorceessentials.net. You can reach out to the Mainline Family Law Center if you're looking at mediation or considering that process at mehealthydivorce.com. And Anna, how do people find you?
You can go to my website. My company is called Potential Difference. So www.potentialdifference.net. Got all my details on there where you can find me. I've got a practice in Wayne. I speak, as you said, about investing in yourself and also the price of privilege that costs your children. I speak at different schools and churches, spoke recently at Melbourne Prep and some others coming up. Do get in touch. And I've also got a good network of other therapists as well. Be good to hear from you.
Yeah. And it would really, and Anna is really a great speaker, as you've heard today. And so the opportunity for her to share, you know, wisdom and thoughts at churches, at schools, at kind of events that you have that really about bringing this forward, about parenting, about love and relationships. She's a great resource for that. And I think actually My Healthy Divorce is now Mainline Divorce, but either one of them will work to get you to them. And so I just want to also invite you to come back in April and just after tax day. We wanted everyone to be able to get through tax day. But then we have guest Maggie Baker, who has written a book called Crazy About Money. I'm really talking about the emotional side of money, since one of the hottest points of contention in any divorce is the equitable distribution. I'm thinking about the resources, since it pertains very directly to our survival and how we see ourselves going forward. And so we're going to be talking with Maggie Baker and Crazy About Money on, I believe it's April 16th. So we look forward to your joining us back then, and we hope you have a great rest of your afternoon, and we really do encourage you to reach out to any or all of us with questions that you have or conversations you want to pursue. Thanks for joining us today.